The second Aliyah of Parshas Va'era begins off by telling us the names of the descendants of Reuven and Shimon and Levi. And the Oznayim Latorah explains why it is that specifically these Shvatim are being named and their descendants are being listed, because here we find that the Malchus and the Kahuna are normally given by Yerusha, by Torah law, to the Bechor. And in this case, now here we have them given to Moshe and Aaron together with this big mission to take the Jews out. And they are from the tribe of Levi, the third brother. So the question is, why are we skipping the first two who are older? So therefore, the Torah wants to list all of the members of these families in order to show us that there isn't anyone who was equal among them, so we would understand that nobody is being improperly skipped over. So we have the list of all of these descendants of these families, and within the family of Levi, Pasuk Chaf tells us about the history of Moshe Rabbeinu, and we read, "Vayikach Amram es Yocheved Dodaso lo Isha v'Teila lo es Aaron v'es Moshe u'shnei Chay Amram sheva u'shloshim ashana." That here Amram married Yocheved, who was his aunt, and she gave him the children of Aaron and Moshe. So here, the fact that he married his aunt, which is something that the Torah would ultimately prohibit, this is something which is a little bit surprising, considering that he was the Gadol Hador, essentially. He was a great man, and even though it was not yet prohibited, but we know that the Avos kept the Torah before it was given, and if he was the spiritual leader, we would imagine that he would also take on practices such as this. So in the Sefer Chamudei Tzvi, he suggests that this is conveyed to us together with this language of Vateila lo es Aaron v'es Moshe, in order to convey that this is why he did it, because he had a nevuah, he had a prophecy that the saviors of the Jewish people would come from this relationship, and it's only because of that that he chose to do this action, which he otherwise would have abstained from, being that it was something that was less than preferable. It would have ultimately been prohibited, but because it was necessary for the Yeshua of Klal Yisrael, and it wasn't technically prohibited, so then he understood that it was necessary. The Bali Hatosis in Croesus point out that the Torah does not identify this particular relationship with the specific Isser of Kares explicitly, because since Moshe was born from this relationship, so then we don't want to embarrass him by identifying that Onesh explicitly. And this is a midah that the Torah has in general, when it's something that someone can't change, so then we don't want to cause them embarrassment by highlighting that aspect. And as the Sfarim point out, this is how we find also that we know Chazal understand that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu refers to the Shiras Haluchos and has the language Es Haluchos Asher Shibarta, and Chazal understand that that was actually a good thing, Yashikoch Shibarta, so how did they know that that was a good thing? Because if it wasn't, God wouldn't have emphasized it, because that would have been painful to Moshe to have it brought up, even if it was necessary. So the fact that it's being mentioned, it must be that it was a positive thing. So this is the same kind of idea here, that we find that the onesh associated with marrying an aunt is davka not mentioned to Moshe, through Moshe, because it was a source of embarrassment to him, because that was his own origin. In Pasuk of Gimel, we're told about Aaron's marriage, which is of a different nature. Vayikach Aaron es Elisheva basal min Adav achos Nachshon lo Isha. He married the sister of Nachshon. And the Gemara in Bava Basra, Handaf Kuf Yud Amar Aleph, tells us that the reason the Torah is identifying who her brother was is because this is an important tip, that when someone gets married, he should always check out the brothers of the girl he's interested in marrying, because that will give him an indication of what she's like. This will give her a clue of the kind of household in which she is raised, and that will tell him a lot about her nature. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky pointed out that that was true once upon a time when women were raised completely within the household and all of the influences came only from the household. So then it's safe to assume that everything could be gleaned from the other family members, because that's where all the influences came from. But nowadays there are many influences coming from many other places, so that wouldn't necessarily tell you everything, but presumably it would tell you something, and it would still have some value, but not necessarily all of the value that it had once upon a time. looking at Pasuk Chaf Hei, so we read about the origin of Pinchas. Elazar ben Aaron, lakach lo mibros putia lo l'isha, v'teila lo es Pinchas, ela rashi avos halavim l'mishpachosam. So here, this reference to Putiel, so we know that this is a reference to Yisro, who was mefatim animals for Avodah Zarah. So this is a reference to his history with idolatry. And we have also the reference to Yosef, that Yosef was somebody who was able to fight off his Yitzhahara for his Nus. And Pinchas was descended from both. And this was a source of strength for him from both types of challenges. In the case of Yosef, so Yosef overcame the instinct for his Nus. And Yisro also overcame the instinct for Avodah Zarah, because even though the reference is to his involvement in Avodah Zarah, but ultimately he came to reject Avodah Zarah, and that means that he was able to overcome it, and he had to then also deal with the harassment of all of his former associates who would persecute him for his having left the Avodah Zarah. So the fact that he did leave the Avodah Zarah is a strong statement of his ability to overcome it, and therefore both of these ancestries were a source of merit for Pinchas that he was able to draw from. And that's a part of what the Torah is conveying to us. Why indeed do we have to have the Yichus going all the way down in this direction, all the way down to Pinchas? In the Sefer Chamurei Tzvi, he suggests that a part of what we're trying to draw upon here in terms of the hope for the Jewish people and the redemption is not only their possibility of being redeemed at this point, but also the fact that they will be redeemed from future problems as well. So we know that ultimately there will be continued galus, but there will be redemption also through Eliyahu. And since we have a tradition that Pinchas hu Eliyahu, so therefore we're making reference here to the birth of Pinchas in order to be merames, in order to allude to the future gul as well, and the knowledge that even if there will be continuing galus, but together with that, there will also be continuing gula, and that should be a source of hope together with this redemption also. In Pasuk Chavav, we read about Aaron and Moshe, who Aaron and Moshe, Asher Amar Hashem Lohem, Hotziu es Bnei Yisrael, Me'eretz Mitzrayim, Al Tzivosam. So here we find Aaron mentioned before Moshe, and the Tosefta in Krisus tells us that Aaron is mentioned here before Moshe in order to show that they are equal. And the Svarim discuss what that means exactly by identifying them as equal. Some explain, like the Sefer Likutei Yehuda understands it, it just means to say that in this context they have equal roles, that there are different things that have to be accomplished. They have to convince the Jews to go along with what they're trying to do, and they have to convince Paro to let them go, and that requires different skill sets. So Moshe and Aaron each played their own role, and each was important, and each was necessary to an equal degree. And that's what we mean. Others understand it to mean that they were actually of equal stature, which is difficult because we have the tradition of Lo Kam Yisrael Kamoshe, that no one was equal to Moshe in Jewish history. So the Sefer is Nayim Lutara. He understands that to be answered by the fact that Aaron lived for 3 years longer than Moshe. So if indeed they were equal, that means that Moshe accomplished rising to that equal level in less time than Aaron did, and since both of them as tzaddikim did as much as they could in the time that they had, it means that by reaching an equal level, Moshe essentially was greater by reaching that same point in less time, and therefore it continues to be true that Moshe was at a level that no one else in Jewish history ever reached. The Ksav Sofer has a different explanation to address this question, and he suggests that yes, it's true that ultimately Moshe reached a level that was beyond what anyone else ever reached, but at this point they were equal, and he is on the cusp of rising to a level that is beyond what anyone else ever did, and that is because they haven't yet spoken to Paro, and they haven't yet had the full experience where Moshe is going to be confronted with the challenge of Gaiva to a degree that is unprecedented. And the fact that he is able to go face to face with Paro to such an extent and not become big-headed and not become a balgaiva and really own his anivus to a fantastic degree, so then he really steps into his greatness. So at that point, he will really become of such a level that no one else will be able to match. But before that, at this point, here he is indeed equal to Aaron, and that's what's being conveyed. In Pasuk Chavchas, we find the language of Vayhi Biyom Diber Hashem al Moshe the Eretz Mitzrayim, that this is the time when Hashem spoke to Moshe in Eretz Mitzrayim. That's how the Aliyah closes. And this language of Vayhi is a language of Tsar. It's normally a language that conveys something unfortunate. And the Znayim L'Torah suggests that's because here we have God speaking to the Jews in Mitzrayim, as the Pasuk literally states. And even though it's true that before Eretz Yisrael was selected, so yes, God spoke to the Jews and God spoke to people in places other than Eretz Yisrael, but it had to be a place that was at least a pure place. So the idea that he would speak in a tummy place such as Mitzrayim, that's unusual, and that could only be because it was necessary, because of the tremendous tsar of the Jewish people that had to be addressed. So therefore, this was a reflection of great crisis, of great anguish and emergency for the Jewish people. So it's understandable that it is portrayed with this language of tsar, beginning with Vayihi, to represent the unfortunate circumstances in which they find themselves, but in which we hope to find redemption coming from.